What it is, Brad Lee back again with another episode of Dropping Bombs today in the studio. Folks, as always, got a real treat for you. UFC badass Andre Petroski in the house. Is it Petroski or Petroski?
Petroski.
Now, if you went back to the homeland, where would be your family from a long time ago's homeland?
My great-grandfather was from Russia, Soviet Union.
That's a Russian name.
Yeah.
Now, if you went back to the homeland of Russia, how would they pronounce it?
Petroski.
Really? Yeah. How do you know? It sounds like Petroski.
You might be right.
You know what I'm saying? I got a Russian hat in there. Are you Russian? Would you say you're Russian or no?
Yeah.
I got a Russian hat I'll give you.
Okay.
From the actual...
The big fur one?
Nope. Okay. It's like one of those Russian...
For the sauna?
It's actually, the words on it mean from the Black Navy. It's like a badass Russian military guy's hat. So anyway, folks, if you guys don't know who this dude is, well, then you're probably gay because you don't watch the UFC. And I think anyone who doesn't watch the UFC is probably a little bit suspect. I would say you're what? Division one wrestler, middleweight, the best grappler in the UFC, middleweight.
Yes.
And how do they judge? How do they say that? Like, how do they know?
Basically, one day I said, I'm the best grappler in this division.
And they said,
and
okay.
No one had anything to say about it. So they were like, well, if no one's going to argue it, then there we go.
Who would?
I don't know.
Who else is out there that's a kick-ass grappler?
Well, one that's a big grappler is Bo Nickel. In college wrestling, they have like the Heisman Trophy is considered, it's called the Dan Hodge Trophy. And he won the Dan Hodge Trophy, which is basically the best wrestler, all weight classes, all divisions.
Have you ever fought him?
No. That's one I'm looking to get, though.
See, again, I mean, when you guys get paired up, who does the pairing? Dana himself, or is there a team of people that try to figure out who's going to be a good fight?
Yeah, good question. At the end of the day, like, Dana and the matchmakers do have, like, the last decision, but... There's definitely some factors, like, you know, the more like a guy like Sean O'Malley, who sells a lot, like really well liked, draws the attention. A guy like that can pick his matchups. He has more of a say than a guy that, you know, doesn't speak as well or doesn't sell as much. So like, you know, the amount of impact, the more you produce, the more money you make, you're certainly going to have a more of a say.
How do they pay you guys?
So, good question. Like base salary. So let's say you just get signed, like off the streets or whatever, not off the streets, but a base salary, typical base salary is 10 and 10. That's the minimum. Like nobody gets paid less than that, which means you show up, you make weight, you fight, you get $10,000. If you win that fight, you get another $10,000. And then your contract can be, you know, it can go up by 3, it can go up by 5. Then it's kind of like up to the discretion if you win or lose. So typically you get like a 4-fight contract. That's like standard.
Do they pay you in advance?
No, they'll pay you as soon as the fight's over. Wire it to your bank account.
It's just crazy how they're making so much money and they don't give those fighters shit.
Yeah.
Because 10 G's, like nothing. They're making hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Why can't, I assume once you start getting popular and you're selling tickets, you get more then.
So that's one of the factors. Obviously, the more popular you are, the higher up on these cards you get. If you're in the main event, like that's when you can start.
Oh, so that's the preliminaries.
Yeah. Like anything.
That makes sense. Yeah. But what about when you're like up there?
So for my situation was, I was in my last fight, the fight before, I was in Thailand on vacation. I had just fought. I went to Thailand. I wanted to train. I love traveling. So we went to Thailand to train and, they called me. They're like, my manager called me. He's like, hey, they want you to fight, Pereira next weekend. And I was like, you know, nah, I'm good. I went 5-0 on my first fight. So, and I was up for a new contract. I was like, I'm good. So, he's like, well, yeah. So they ended up paying me a lot of money to take that fight. It was on 10 days notice. I had to lose a bunch of weight. So situations like that, you can jump a couple contracts, you know, like there's standard contracts. You might go from 10 and 10 to your second contract making 30 and 30. Or you can jump some contracts by, it's negotiating. Like, all right, nobody else is going to take that fight against Pereira. Like, you're going to have to pay me.
Why is it no one will take the fight? They're not ready. They're scared. He was a super
dangerous opponent, one. He's, if everyone ever seen, he does like the backflips off the cage. It was super short notice. It was 10 days notice. You know, most of the 85 pounders in the division are walking around at 210, 220 pounds. They can't lose 35 pounds in 10 days. You know what I mean? So if no one wants to do that job, that you're in a good position, you know, for negotiating.
So did you get paid?
Yeah.
Good?
Yeah.
And did you win or lose?
What's that? That fight I lost. Yeah.
What's your record?
10-3.
So those three fights, if you fought them three times in a row, would you lose every time?
I would certainly take all three fights again. Like if they were like, hey, you want a rematch? I would say yes to all three. And I would bet on myself.
Do you ever like get done fighting and then want to see the tape? Like to see where you fucked up or what happened? Because in my mind, dude, you can have two badasses and any given night one can win because you did this when you should have did that and all this other shit. One crack to the fucking jaw by a professional fighter, most people are going down. It doesn't mean that they're better fighters. It means they were better fighters that night.
For sure. The other thing is that when you fight, and it starts to like change a little bit as you get more experience, but you're in such a like fight or flight mode while you're out there that after the fight, you don't really like remember. You're like so tunnel visioned. Like you got the crowd, you got a guy trying to kill you. You have all this pressure you put on yourself that like, you don't really remember exactly what happened in the fight until you go back and watch it.
But you do go watch it?
Absolutely.
Is it like part of training?
Absolutely. Yeah. My coach now, Eddie Torres, from Team Taino, we sit down and we watch film all of my opponent's fights, all of my fights. I record every sparring round I did the entire camp. I record everyone. We sit down and we watch it together. Like, look, you need to step more on your jab. You need to bring your hand back to your face on your cross. Like, yeah, I mean.
And are you thinking that in the cage?
What's that?
Are you thinking that in the cage? Like, are you trying to think, okay, hand back?
Yes and no. So like I'll focus on one thing. I can't be thinking about a million things at once. I got to focus on one thing. So if the one thing I'm doing wrong is, you know, not stepping on my punches, that's the one thing I'm going to keep in my mind. All right, I'm going to focus on stepping when I punch.
Now, who's the most famous fight you won?
Either Mearshart or Nick Maximov. At the time when I fought Maximov, I was +300 underdog. So 3-1 underdog. He was undefeated. And he was like Nate Diaz's prodigy coming out of his gym.
And you won that one.
Yeah.
So how many and how do you get to fight for the belt?
Keep working up the rankings. Keep climbing up the rankings.
Keep winning. So if you would have won that last one against Pereira, would that have like fucking catapulted you to the top?
Not to the top, but like top 15, top 10.
So how, and where are you right now?
Probably 30.
So if Dana called you right now and said, fight the main guy, do you think there's a major skill set difference between the very top and 30?
So styles make matchups and there's not a lot of really good grapplers at the top. There's good strikers, you know, they're really good strikers, but my style is like really matches up really well with a lot of the top guys, the guys in the top 10.
And you're willing to take that fight if the money's right.
Of course.
Even if you think you might lose
100%. Like,
do people think they might lose or are they all just fucking delusionally? I'll kick your fucking face in.
When I took that fight with Pereira, I still think that like I can beat him, but I knew that the cards were stacked against me like significantly, being that I was on the other side of the world. It was short notice. You know what I mean?
Why do you think they selected you?
Because two times prior to that, they called me on 10 days notice and I said yes. And when, you know, if you have an employee you can count on, are you going to call him or are you going to call someone else?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That is what it is.
And see, people don't see it like that. They don't see it like a business. They see it like a sport and they think that, you know, they like maybe Pereira, is it Pereira?
Yeah.
He picked you, but it wasn't. It's like there's like a matcher, right? Right. He wouldn't have cared who it was.
Yeah. So our matchmakers are Mick Maynard and Sean Shelby.
So if you went to them right now and said, hey, dude, I want to fight the best of the best, they're going to tell you no, even if they think you can beat them, or they might pair you up if they thought you could.
So they might say yes, but then that guy also is going to take a huge risk fighting down, right? So let's say I want to fight the number three guy.
Oh, that guy's taking a risk.
Yeah, because if he's number three and I'm 23 and he loses to me, I'm going to take his spot. He's going to drop in the rankings. So if his goal is to fight for the title, you know what I mean? It wouldn't make sense to fight down.
See, there's a whole business behind that. I'm trying to learn a little bit better. You think if I start rolling, doing jujitsu, I'll start understanding what you guys are doing in there better?
Absolutely.
Because you can hear people on the side going, you know, to us regular people, I'm thinking, oh, fuck, he's fucked. When you hear like Joe or somebody commentating, they're like, you know, oh, he doesn't have, his hips aren't in the right place. Like, when you learn, you start to see it differently.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. You get a different perspective.
And how did you, like, where'd you come from?
So I grew up in Springfield.
Illinois?
Pennsylvania. It's like 10 minutes from the Philly airport.
So you grew up in Springfield, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, big, big wrestling family. My dad ran a karate studio.
Oh, so you're a martial artist from the get-go?
Yeah, my dad did some boxing as well. He was a power lifter. So, you know, all the things he did, I did as well. We grew up watching the original WEC days, which was like Uriah Faber, like old school fighting. I grew up watching all that.
Do you know him?
Uriah Faber? The man.
Yeah, he's fucking funny, dude. Yeah, he was in here once or twice. He's a funny son of a bitch.
Really? Yeah, no, he's cool. We were out in Vegas, and he had his son was like, I want to say like 16 months old. Like a baby. And I was blown away. This kid was just diving in the pool. He would swim to the other side of the pool, climb out of the pool, run around to the other side. And he was doing it over 16 months old. I was like, wow, that's incredible.
Dude, it's funny you say that because my wife was telling me last night that somebody's kid was two doing the same thing. And I said, not at two. No way. No way.
Yeah.
Are you shitting 16 months?
It was incredible. I was blown away.
He taught him that or something?
He said that he's got a pool at home. The kid's just always in the pool. Eventually he got more and more comfortable with it. And he just, yeah, he's good.
All right. So you're 32?
Yep.
Say 18 years old, where are you? Just getting out of high school. What are you doing? Are you fighting? Are you already a badass that fights like in the streets, people? Or no, you're just a sportsman.
Yeah, I've been in trouble a few times for fighting people in the streets, the wrong people. Yeah.
Why?
I mean, it's illegal in the United States.
No, I mean, why are you fighting?
Just, I think that deep down inside all of us, like that's like the most natural primal thing is we all want to fight like to some point.
But where do you draw the line? Actually, I got a better question. What about people that don't have that instinct? Cause I've always had the fucking, they say you got fight or flight.
Yeah.
I got the fucking flight. Like, dude, I've had to fight and I win because you get me in a position where I got to fight and dude, I go fucking nuts. But this was back in the day where there was no fucking martial artists or MMA guys. It was just dudes. So luckily I haven't been in a million, but you know, the ones I was in, I've won. And I think it's because when you push me to that level, I'm like a fucking wild man. I hit like three ways, fast, hard, and consecutively. And I'm not going to stop until I think you're incapacitated. But again, to me, I'm not eager to fight. A little dude can come up and like fucking, yeah. Some people would say punk you. Yeah, punk you. Yeah, well, not punk me because little or big, I think no one wins in a fight. I'm talking about a street fight, not a fucking contest. Nobody wins in a street fight. I watched a buddy of mine, badass son of a bitch, walked up, smacked a dude, broke his hand. Talking about, you see how he fucked me? Because he did knock him out. But he had a broken hand. Like, did he win? Did he win that? Like, to me, it's like, that ain't a win. But there are other people, like yourself, and like badasses that I know, they want to fucking fight. They have no fear in it. Matter of fact, they enjoy it. How do you shift from pussy, flight instinct, to fucking badass, fight instinct?
I mean, I think the key word there was I was 18 years old. You know what I mean? You're able to see the big picture. You know what I mean? You have seven kids and a family and
businesses.
No,
I was like this young, dude. I was like this my whole life.
Okay.
I was never like, oh, you want to fucking fight, dude? I was always like, I don't want to fight. I don't want to fight. And then when you made me, then I would. Because obviously I'm not stupid. You have to when you're made to.
Yeah.
But how do you shift from that almost, I would say, fear of... Because every time I did get in a fight, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Right.
You know, you get punched in the face and you're like, oh, that wasn't as bad as I thought it'd be. But I'm thinking, you punch me in my face will shatter. So I'm just trying to avoid. I think it's my natural instinct of preservation.
Like, yeah.
I have a high self-preservation instinct. And I see other people that don't. And I'm not talking about trained, because once you're trained, I think then it's a little different, because now you got a little more confidence.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was a fighter. I had an older brother.
So you've been fighting your whole life?
Yeah.
When you were young, did they make you fight?
I don't know about... I had no choice. Like, my brother was bigger than me, would definitely bully me. And my dad was not a gentle person either.
Okay, you know, so maybe we're taught that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
Well, I need to figure out how to shift. That's why I'm going to start...
Daniel
rolling.
Gracie's.
Yeah, because, dude, I mean, maybe that'll freaking change things.
Yeah.
Because I want to be the dude that, you know, is cool like a motherfucker, and I'll beat your ass.
Right.
Because you see it in the movies, and it's just fucking cool. You know what I mean? You ever see the saying where the guy says, you know, you're about 2 seconds away from the most embarrassing moment of your life? And the guy's like, you know, a bully.
Yeah.
And then the dude knocks him out. Like, that's just cool.
Yeah.
But, so I'm thinking that, like, you're a hoodlum. You're not a hoodlum. You're an athlete. You're wrestling. You got confidence from that. You're not you start fighting early because your dad's into mixed martial arts, and then someone lips off and you got in fights.
Yeah.
But you're not a hoodlum.
No, I wasn't like a bully. You know, I don't think I was a bully. Yeah, no, I was
a good kid. Hoodlum and a bully is two different things.
Okay. No, I wasn't a hoodlum.
I'm using like old man terms, hoodlum.
Yeah.
In other words, out stealing, breaking into cars, breaking into houses, doing drugs, selling drugs, and beating people's ass and taking their money, whatever.
I did get into drugs, but later in life.
What kind of drugs?
So my first introduction to drugs, I had a neighbor, and his mom would give us Oxy-80s. So opiates, Oxycontin. Yeah,
dude, you're fucking real lucky. Those things are dangerous.
For sure, for sure. And you know, like freshman year of high school, 16, 17, and at this point, like wrestling, I was all in on wrestling, like doing well in wrestling. And but like, you know, you're always cutting weight. And a lot of times, like, my friends would be out like having parties or drinking, and I couldn't drink. So that was like my first introduction to drugs. Yeah.
Couldn't drink because you're cutting weight. And I gotcha. So how'd you get out of the drug scene?
So I went away to college. I went to UNC Chapel Hill. So I got away from, like, as the drugs started getting bad in my area and everyone around me was doing drugs, I got away for a while. And, you know, I was at UNC like 11 months out of the year. So, like, I didn't get wrapped up as early as a lot of other people, but eventually, you know, when I finished college, I came back and back to like this, doing the same stuff, the same people. And it got real ugly for me.
Now, Sean, who we both, who introduced me to you, says, man, this guy's one of the greatest guys ever. Why does he say that about you?
I mean,
does everyone say that about you?
I don't know about that, but I'll take it. I don't know. I think I definitely have a good story. It got real dark for me with the drugs.
Now hold on, because I'm reading what he told me. Oxycontin. This says you overcame heroin addiction. Yeah. So you went from pills to heroin?
Yeah.
Shooting it?
Yep.
Holy shit, bro. Like, that's major.
Yeah.
See, I ain't even done that.
Right.
I tell people, you know, I only did the light shit, like, you know, coke, meth, acid, mushrooms, weed, you know?
That's the light shit?
That's what most people say. Like, no, but that's the fucking real shit. Heroin, dog? The worst. That's the worst. Major shit there. That's like PCP, angel dust. Like, that's the highest level. How did you escape that?
So,
were you doing it like hooked on it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And like got just really desperate, like wanted to stop for a long time and just couldn't, like, didn't know, needed help bad. And, what ended up happening was I had a fight at this point. Like, I was just in real bad shape. Like, I remember, I had a kickboxing fight and I went to see the doctor in the back and they were doing like my blood pressure. My arms are like just destroyed, like track marks all up my arms. And I just remember thinking, like, when is this going to end? Like, impending doom. Like I know I'm in bad shape and I don't know how to stop this, but I almost want it to, like, I want something to happen so it stops. And, I ended up fighting that fight. And then I went home and I tried to kick on my, at my mom's house on the couch. I tried to, and I made it like 3 days and I was just like dying, like just hurting bad. And I ended up going down the way, getting high with this kid, and I overdosed. On the way back in his car, I overdosed. So he calls the paramedics and they ended up coming to the scene. And when I was revived, when I came back to, I like freaked out. I panicked and I tried to run. And there was like a cop behind the, so what happened was the paramedics were like, okay, you refuse treatment. And I said, yeah. And they're like, okay, you just got to step out of the car and sign this. Like, I don't know if it's affidavit or something. And I was like, all right. Threw the clipboard up in the air and just started booking it. And this cop was behind the car, threw me up against the ambulance, put a stun gun on the back of my head, pissed myself. Like, yeah, I was like bad. So then I went to jail.
That would be hoodlum circumstances.
Yeah. So no, you're right. So then I go to the holding cell. And of course the judge is on vacation. I'm not going to be able to see a judge. But probably the best thing that ever happened to me. So like 24 hours into that, I start getting real sick, right? I'm like bad, like shitting myself, like begging the guard for toilet paper. Like, he's like, oh, you know, the judges come back tomorrow. You'll be all right. Like, yeah, I was in, truly desperate, broken, spiritually bankrupt, like at rock bottom. Like, this is my rock bottom, is like, I'm shitting myself, dope sick in a cell. I think I'm getting... I got possession charges, assaulting an officer. Like, this is the worst. And that was the moment. Like, I remember, like leading up to that, like my whole life, like on Sundays, my mom would work 8 to 8. My dad would take us to church. And, like a lot of times, like we would go to church and then we'd come back and like, you know, my brother would beat me up. Then my dad would beat us for fighting. And it was just like, I don't think this church thing's working. Like, I had no relationship with God. I had no, like, God was, I just didn't think, I didn't need God, right? But this was the moment where it was like a smack in the face of like, oh, you need God. Like, you're fucking this up on your own. And so, like, I remember I got on my knees and I was like, I said, like, the foxhole prayer. Like, you know, you got the cop lights in the rearview mirror. Like, you're desperate. And I was just like, look, like, I'm sorry for abandoning you. Like, whatever it takes. If you get me out of this situation, if you get me out of this foxhole, like, I'll never abandon you and I'll never touch drugs ever again. And, like soon later, one of the guards came in. He was like, you want to go to jail or you want to go to treatment? And I was like, treatment, send me. And that was the start of me getting help. And it was one of the best things that ever happened to me. Like, I learned so much in treatment and all the treatment that I did after that, like coping skills, mindset, like, dude, I was out of my mind. You know what I mean? Like, and I just learned, like, made me so much better. You know what I mean? Like, such a better person. I owe my life to that experience right there.
Is that what caused you to start like wanting to help people? I know you have a thing going to help raise money for a kid with leukemia or something.
So the basic premise of the program is like, you know, when we're drinking or doing drugs, like it's such a selfish act. Like we sacrifice so much, our families, like everything, my career, like we sacrifice so much, such a selfless act. So like you have to flip that into being like selfless, like helping others. If you don't give it away, like you don't get it back, right? So you have to help others and in return that helps you.
So just for all the Bomb Squad listeners, you know, there's a young man with leukemia.
Yeah, 10-year-old kid named Adam at our gym at Team Taino. Just got diagnosed with leukemia. He's got two brothers. The mom's really needs our help. So we just started a GoFundMe. We're also selling shirts and gloves at the gym.
How do they buy the shirts or gloves?
So we'll do online orders. If you message the Team Taino Instagram page, we'll do online. We'll ship orders if you're not in the area.
Also, I'll put the link and put the GoFundMe link.
Yeah. So we just got the GoFundMe too. So we'll put the link in there too. If you're not local and you want to help out, like I'm a father as well. And so like when a kid gets sick, like I can't even imagine, like, I just, when my daughter has like a cough, I feel like helpless. Like I can't do nothing. You know what I mean? It's like, it's that one thing that's out of your control. So it's just such a tragic situation and I want to help as much as I can.
Yeah. And everybody listening, if you can go support that. So dude, when you're going through this shit, are you a Division I wrestler?
No, at this point I was fighting. I graduated college. I graduated from Kutztown with a communications degree, and I was fighting
after or before.
After,
like, I'm trying to place it in the timeline. Yeah. Like you were fucking up. That's fucking up hard, bro.
After college, I started fighting after.
I know, but
college.
What you just described.
Yeah.
Are you already a wrestler, or is this past wrestling?
Past wrestling.
So you were a Division I wrestler that ended up fucking damn near going down the wrong path.
To say the least.
And thank God God intervened and said enough's enough. Yeah. And you agreed. And then after that, what?
After
you said, yeah.
So, I mean, I had my daughter. That was a huge, huge part of me. My entire life has been about winning, right? Whether it's college or whether it's wrestling or school, it's always been about me. What do I have to do for me to win? So my daughter was like the first time where it's not about me anymore. Like, you know, it's that selflessness part. So that was having my daughter was a huge shift in my perspective just on the world and life. Yeah. And it definitely helped me stay straight after that.
Well, kids will do that. But, you know, one thing I learned is, because I was 30 running a car dealership and it was all about me. I was just trying to get rich.
Yeah.
And I really couldn't. I mean, I made $500,000 a year or so, but I couldn't get it until I finally helped somebody. And I thought, man, that feels good. Let me go help people do this. And as soon as, now looking back, that's when everything shifted. So it sounds like same thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Dude,
yeah.
who do you think's going to win between Mike Tyson and Jake Paul?
A little off track, but I like the question. So
I have a little bit of ADD.
likewise. Mike Tyson's like a huge underdog. I like that bet.
Is he really?
Yeah, because he looked good against Roy Jones, even though it wasn't like a real, like, you know, they, you know, there was like a no knockout club, whatever. They were sparring out there, but he looked good. I thought he looked, like, for 54 years old, 56, like, he looked really good against Roy Jones.
Why is it? Because he looks really good when you see him on Instagram doing his gloves.
The peekaboo.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, it looks like he's just whacking those things. And you're thinking, man, if Jake's standing in front of that, he's going down.
For sure.
Why isn't it? And when I saw him fight Roy Jones, he wasn't doing that. He didn't look that good. So to me, it's like, what's the difference between, you know, doing the gloves, you know, looking like you're just murdering people, and then when there's someone in front of you, it doesn't look like that.
My perspective is that
because someone's hitting you back.
When you see him hitting pads, those are like 12-second clips. You know what I mean? A fight is, you know, 12 rounds or 6 rounds. I don't know what their rule set is, but it's longer. You have to conserve energy much differently. And if you watch Tyson towards the end of his career, his fatigue, that peekaboo style is exhausting. And so you could see in his fights, he started to fade towards the end of the fights.
But if you had to bet Tyson or Jake?
Tyson.
And I bet
plus three, I think he's plus 300. Yeah, that's worth it.
Do you believe in any bone in your body that it's rigged?
I have heard that the Paul brothers do not fight people unless they're winning. They're gonna win, which means it's already decided. But I said, I don't know what truth that is to that, but that's what I've heard.
Well, I mean, everybody makes claims.
But like I don't know, man. Some of his knockouts look legit. Like, some people say they look fake, but the Ben Askren one looked pretty legit. Yeah, I don't know. I think I would like to believe that Tyson has enough money that he's not getting paid to take a dive.
Woodley looked legit, but when I watched the slow motion and all the conspiracy guys, it said, now watch his hand, which is the signal. Jake's hand went like this, which again, if I'm fighting, I might tweak my hand or move it, but in slow motion, it went like this. Yeah. And then all of a sudden he freaking swung and Woodley's hand didn't do that at all. Now, again, I mean, it could have been real, but I don't know which way to lean, because if I'm Jake Paul, I ain't fighting Mike Tyson unless Tyson agrees. But if I'm smart like Jake Paul, I'd be willing to, you know, throw $20 million or whatever it's worth to have him fall.
If you're gonna make 100, what's 20? You know,
the,
what I mean?
The question is would Mike take it? Because Mike's not your average bear, dude.
He might. And I don't think you ever seen the interview. One of my favorite interviews with Mike, where they're like, "You have money issues," and he's like, "My only issue with money is I have too much of it." He's like,
"When was that though?"
This was like right when he went bankrupt. So like, you know, his mindset is like, he's obviously comes from the streets. Like, he's had no money. So he knows, like, I don't think he's all about the money is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And then there's also, you know, rumors and people talking shit that he doesn't have any. Mike Tyson still has money. And not only that, now he's involved with like a weed farm and shit. Yeah. So he's making money.
Yeah. So he's actually one of the like top five highest paid fighters. And like, obviously he doesn't really fight, but he's still getting paid that much. He's still making that much money. Yeah.
Huh.
Well, from all his other endeavors.
And the reason I brought it up is because I keep reading Tyson. So why are you wearing the shirt?
Like, Tyson for me is like, if I asked you, hey, if you could have lunch with anyone in the world, who would it be? Anybody.
Anybody? I'd have to think, because I wouldn't want to be reactive, you know, but not Mike.
Mike is mine. I'm a fighter. You know what I mean? So, but like, his mindset and how he talks about, like, how he would study, like, Achilles and the great, like.
And not only that, dude, he's a smart dude. I've heard him on a couple of stages that we were talking about having you do. He does those. And let me tell you something, dude. He's got some wisdom. Mike Tyson has got some fucking wisdom, dude.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Not only fighting wisdom, but also how to have a successful businesses and life after fighting. Like, he talks a lot about like the ego death and how he had to have that ego death after fighting was over. You know what I mean? Because fighting is like all ego. Like, it's all about me. It's all about I'm a beast. I'm a killer. And then how do you shift that to, you know, being a family man after it's all over? So like, I got a lot of questions for him, you know?
Well, maybe I can arrange a lunch with you.
That would be a dream come true.
Well, again, one way for sure to do it is just keep kicking that ass all the way up till you get a belt. You know, I'll bet you anything, you know, if let's use Conor McGregor, and he didn't have a belt. He had belts. He lost them though.
He lost them, but he did get both. He got two belts. He was a double 45 and 55.
And even if he never did, we use a Conor McGregor because everyone knows that name. You get to that level of anything, and believe it or not, like, you know, you're in those circles. Like the other day, I'm sitting there watching my buddy Gary Brecka. You know Gary Brecka?
Yeah.
He's sitting there freaking training Tom Brady. I'm like, I don't get it. But then you know, Dana put him on. I had Gary here first. He said, dude, you freaking made a major difference in my business. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm cool. So like, you know, then Dana, then freaking Joe Rogan's podcast. I mean, Brecka's now up there with all of them, but yeah. I know Mike, not to the level where I could just call him and say, hey Mike, do me a favor. But I was lucky enough to hang out with him a couple times, for a while. And you know, he's just a solid dude.
Yeah.
And I can't believe, and I'm sure glad he turned the corner, 'cause you know, he could have went the other way
for sure.
So,
yeah, for sure.
So, dude, what are your plans? Like, what do you, what is your goals? What is your dream? I know you want to speak at events.
Yeah.
And I know that you want to do, you love traveling and you want to go do like workshops for coaches. So if there's coaches listening, you know, any kind of gym, any kind of wrestling, what about like boxing?
Yeah. So I do seminars. I love to travel. Like, I've always been big on traveling, seeing different parts of the world. Like, I've always wanted to travel. If you have a gym in you know, another state, another country, I'd love to come do a seminar.
And not only that, I said, how much do you charge, dude? I'm not going to say what he said, but trust me, like, money ain't going to be a problem. Like, if I was you, I'd charge way more than that.
Yeah, I mean, I try to be reasonable, you know?
Well, that's unreasonable. Right. Like, that's, people are going to go like, really?
Yeah.
But hey, I'm not going to ruin it for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So how do they reach out to you to have you, to book you for those?
On Instagram, you know, Instagram message.
Andre Petroski, by the way, yep. Just like it sounds, A-N-D-R-E-P-E-T-R-O-S-K-I. So people can book you to come do little workshops and little seminars for the kids.
I also do the speaking commitments. I have another one coming up on Monday and Tuesday in Baltimore. I'm speaking at the Internet Sales 20 group. My buddy Sean Bradley is hosting it. It's a dealership convention.
For car dealers. And you're sponsored by Apollo, aren't you?
Yep. Apollo is my car dealership in Sewell, New Jersey. Shout out to them. They've taken care of me.
That's the business I grew up in. Yeah. So like they're kind of like my people.
Yeah, I've had two cars from them. 3 years they've sponsored me. They've helped out tremendously. Yeah, they actually just hooked me up. I got the I don't know if you ever seen like the TV Henry Cejudo uses, where he can play a fight and he can pause it, and then he can pause it or slow it down, and then he has the pen and he can circle. Hey, did you see where your hand dropped right here? Like, when you throw this punch, I need your hand up here.
Yeah.
So I just got that. That's huge. I'm like I said earlier, we're big on watching film, studying, you know, working on our weaknesses.
So you're what we would call up and coming.
Yep. For sure.
You're just getting started.
Yeah. Most of these guys, like my teammate, Nursultan, he's from Uzbekistan. He just fought on the same card as me. He's had 50 pro fights. You know what I mean? I've only had 13. Right. So, you know, if I can get to 50 fights, that's when you start making real money.
Why you say if you can?
I mean, it's a rough sport, you know what I mean? And I'm 32, but...
Do you wish you got started earlier?
Yes and no. Obviously, I had to go through what I went through in order to have, you know, the right head on my shoulders. But I do sometimes think, like, if I would have started fighting at 20 instead of 25, you know, I'd be 5 years ahead in my career.
So when you're out... You know, when they're talking, you got, what's his name? Buffer talking about freaking, you know, and it's getting ready. Like, are you just freaking the fuck out, or are you calm as
That's a good question. So typically for me, I'm like real nervous. Like, I go through waves the week of the fight. So I go and like when I get closer to weigh-ins, I'm just sucked out from losing weight. So I'm not really thinking about it. And then I make weight and I get some liquids back in me and I start thinking about the fight and I'm like nervous. I get anxious, like the anticipation. Like I just want it to come. I just want it to come. So I'm nervous. I drive to the arena. I'm real nervous at the arena. But as soon as I go to walk out into the arena, and I hear the music going, it goes from nervousness to excitement to like, all right, let's fucking go. Like, let's do this. And then I'm just excited.
But you lose the fear altogether. Or are you ever fearful? You're just anxious. Is there a fear in you?
Of course.
Fear of what? Getting knocked out, getting your ass kicked out. Are you picturing a splattered nose or?
Sure. Yeah. Getting hurt, failure.
How come? And by the way, do fighters' noses bleed less? Why is it you guys can get constantly smacked in the fucking face and not very many do you see bloody battles anymore?
My last fight, I had a bloody nose between rounds. Yeah.
But I mean, is it because on the side they're cleaning it up? Because you don't see a lot of bloody.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen street fights and this is where I'm getting it from. I mean, street fights, someone bam and the blood smashes everywhere and it's just gushing out of his face. I don't see that in the UFC.
Yeah. They do a good job cleaning it up, especially in between rounds. But yeah, I mean, the canvas is covered in blood. When you go out there to fight, especially if you're later in the night, you're there's blood all over the canvas.
What, if you just wanted to learn stuff to protect yourself against the errant asshole that might be roaming the world, you know, big mouth asshole, yeah. Not a trained fighter. Because usually trained fighters, they're not fucking running around beating people up and being assholes.
Yeah.
So it's usually the big mouths.
Yeah.
Bullies that really don't know how to fight. They're just tough and not afraid to fight. So, and some of them are pretty tough, but they're not trained. What would you take as a, to learn to just defend yourself from the basics? Like if you, could only pick
one. You can't just buy a dog. You buy a dog.
Dog ain't going to do it.
Dog. Heck yeah. What kind of dogs you got?
How many dogs you bring into the bar?
My coach has a King Curso and a Presa Canary.
Not in the bar.
Bro.
I ain't talking about you're at the park playing with your dog and someone bullies you. I'm talking about you're out and about, you know, you're in some atmosphere where, you know, you're face to face with somebody being a dick. What would you want to know to protect yourself?
You got to be able to throw your hands. Like just
so boxing.
Even, basic boxing, like how to throw a punch, like how to hold your fist, right? Like a lot of people don't know how to hold their fist when they throw a punch. They might wrap the thumb around or, you know,
nobody does that.
I'm telling you, some people don't know how to throw a punch.
And that's why maybe nowadays, but nobody, I'm going to hit you.
Right.
Like everybody knows this, don't they?
You would think.
So you would say boxing.
Yeah. How to throw a punch.
Okay. For sure. And then no jujitsu.
Yeah.
What about Krav Maga?
No.
What about Muay Thai, kickboxing.
Okay, I will, like, everyone shits on Krav Maga because it's like a fake, whatever. I'm not going to say it's fake.
It's a fake what?
Like a fake art, a fake sport. But I do think it's cool. Like, I've seen Donald Cerrone did the, or no, Tim Kennedy. They have the knives that are like rubber, but they'll tase you. So it's like simulation. And they'll, like, all right, you have two, a guy, me and Sean are here. Someone throws a knife in between us. Like, all right. Go fight for it. You know what I mean? So it's like, and then they'll see. I think that's cool. Like I'd rather practice that now in case the situation happens in the streets than it happened in the streets and you have no idea.
Well, when you obviously have heard of Andrew Tate.
Yeah.
So old Tate, he's constantly talking about, you know, how dangerous the world is. Like in my opinion, and I like Tate, I ain't against Tate. I like Tate. But if I was ever going to speak against, you know, his philosophy, it's like, dude, you're a bit paranoid.
Yeah.
Like, why do you think the whole, I mean, cause he's like, when I get a haircut, dude, I got to give him $1,000, shut down the barbershop. Cause I'm laying there. Someone could slit my throat. And I'm thinking, why do you fucking think everyone's going to slit your throat? Cause I don't think that way.
Yeah.
I don't worry that I'm going to get killed every day.
Yeah.
So he says that the world is such a dangerous place and that you need to fucking learn to protect yourself. Would you agree?
Well, there's two parts to that. One, I think that obviously this man has created more enemies than he should have if he's constantly worrying about that. But he also, like, obviously says things for clout.
Yeah.
You know,
well, for attention.
Right, for attention.
And he did it wisely.
Yeah.
Again, dude, like, people always ask me, what's your thoughts on him? Well, dude, I think he's a fucking badass. Now, again, if he's actually trafficking people, well, then clearly not. But I don't believe that shit.
Yeah.
I don't believe he did that shit. I believe someone's trying to take him down and discredit him and make him not so influential.
Yeah. And I wouldn't put it past. He's obviously been very, like, outspoken politically.
But if you listen to what he's saying, dude, I agree with him. Like, you know, even learning to fight. Like, I think every dude should learn a little bit. You don't have to be a fucking UFC fighter and you don't have to do it every day and get the ears.
Yeah.
Like, again, dude, do those ears look, are they a badge of honor to fighters?
Yeah. It's funny. That's actually how I met my girlfriend.
Is the ears?
She was like, wow, like, look at your ears. She liked them. She was like, yeah, wow. Like, I love your ears.
I talked to a guy who again, brown belt in jujitsu, wrestler from the back in the day. He didn't have the ears. And I said, well, dude, you can't be that good because you don't have the ears. He goes, dude, don't let that bullshit. He goes, most of those wrestlers, if they wanted to, they can drain it and they can prevent that.
Yeah.
He goes, I didn't like it and I don't want to look like that. So I would have had it if I didn't do anything. Is that true?
some, you can drain them, but mine, like my dad drained mine like every 2 days, my entire, the 1 year, it was like my sophomore, junior of high school. He, every time I'd come home, he'd be like, come on, let me drain it. He thought it was cool. He would just put a needle in it, drain it. No, my ear got mangled that year. If you, unless you're going to take like 2 weeks off after you drain it, it's just going to fill back up. It's just cartilage breaking down. And that's wrestling. In fighting, like, no, if you get hit in the ear, it's not very preventable, to be honest.
If you get hit in the ear, what? That's what causes that?
Yeah. So it's impact to the cartilage. I don't know why it happens to your ear and not your nose, because your nose is cartilage also. But if you hit, it's impact to the cartilage, and then it fills up with blood and hardens.
How many instances in the UFC, because I can't think of any, were people killed?
Not in the UFC, I don't think.
How about like out in Thailand where it's like backwoods shit?
Yeah, there's definitely been some, but I think it's relatively a low percentage.
Are you
know who has the highest death rate is boxing.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, and the big part they talk about that. The big part they talk about is in boxing, you get knocked down, right? Let's say you get knocked out. They give you 10 seconds to get back to your feet. You get your bearings back, but you still have whatever's going on with your brain. They send you back up, you go, and you get hit in the head a bunch more times. And that constant, like, oh, you're getting knocked down, then you get back to your feet. In MMA, that doesn't exist. You get knocked down, they don't stop it. A guy gets on top of you, hits you a couple times, then it's over. If they stop the fight, it's over. So they're saying that taking a couple shots, one or two shots after you get knocked down, and then the fight being over is way less damage than getting knocked down, getting back to your feet, you know, or maybe a round goes and you come back out and you do another whole fight, like another round of fighting. That's where the damage is really occurring.
What about outside of the country, like in those back room?
I'm sure there's way more.
Would you fight in those if someone had willing to pay you enough money?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So you just have zero fear of fighting. Well, obviously now, cause you got the skills, but
no, I told you I get fearful.
You just power through it.
I definitely have like a little bit of a, like that adrenaline junkie.
Out of those three losses, were you knocked out ever?
My last fight. Yeah.
You got knocked out?
Well, it was like a flash. Like I lost, I got hit with a punch and then I hit his hip and I like lost my bearings for like a second. And when I went down, he kind of like seized that opportunity, that small window. And I wasn't like completely out. Like I wasn't like out, but I lost my legs for a second. Like I couldn't, you know what I mean?
But you were coherent.
Aside from that first second, yeah.
Yeah, and see, that's why I said, I think at any given time, maybe you would have won that. Because like you said, I was out for a split second, he took advantage of it. Like you could have done that to him.
Right.
Doesn't make you better than him.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell when you're at the top like that, because I don't see you fight each other more than once. We see you against this person, you win his ass, that's it. Like, I think if Dana really wanted to fucking prove who's the baddest motherfucker on the planet, well then, let you guys fight a series of three where it's like, there's no more one fight. It's now you will fight this person. And then the next night you'll fight him again. And the next night, or even the same night.
Yeah.
Back in the day, dude, there was same night fights.
Yeah. Those were the pride tournaments. They would do the tournaments where guys would fight the whole tournament in a matter of 2 days.
Dude, that's badass.
Yeah. So the reason I got into the UFC was from the Ultimate Fighter. I went on the Ultimate Fighter and, My season, it was season 29. It was Volkanovski and Ortega were the coaches. And in this, you live in a house in Vegas for 7 weeks and you guys fight in a tournament. And it's the same idea. So that from that tournament, that's how I got into the UFC.
You obviously won.
No.
You lost.
Yeah, I lost, but they still signed me after it.
What for?
I was good.
Just because you're good?
Yeah.
So do you believe in your mind you're going to be a champion or no?
Yeah.
Do you have to be a champion?
I know
that
if they give me the right matchups, like I can beat, styles make matchups, I know I can beat these guys.
So most people listening would say, well, that's a dumb question, Brad. Of course, you got to believe you're going to be a champion. I always think like sometimes, dude, shit happens perfectly for you.
Yeah.
Like somebody wins the belt and then, you know, they actually were not the best. Tyson, I'll give you another example. That one time Tyson lost, that fucker wouldn't have beat him twice. Remember? What was his name? I think it's Buster Douglas.
Yeah, Buster Douglas. He was like a plus 3,000 underdog.
Dude, he got lucky. And again, it's like, you know, fight him three times in a row, you're not beaten twice. You're not beating Tyson twice.
Right.
So, you know, anyone can win any given night.
I think that's what makes this sport so great. It's so unpredictable.
Well, that's why I want to, like, maybe add another element of shit, because, like, anybody can win in any given night. Like, Conor McGregor, when he knocked out Jose Aldo with that boom. Do you think if they fought, like, if everybody calmed down for an hour and said, okay, do it again, that would have been the same outcome?
I mean, and that's why they never fought again. Because, I mean, you don't do rematches. Once you win, why would you fight someone again? What do you have to win?
But that's business. Yeah. That's just smart.
Right. And Conor is smart.
Because, I mean, again, why would I want to fight you again if you did that to me? Because I want to beat your fucking face and let everybody know I'm the man, bitch, not you. You got lucky. I hit your fucking hip. You capitalized on the second. Let's go again. Yeah. And I don't care. And if you win again, then maybe you're the better man.
Right.
Because that's what it seems like it's about.
Yeah.
They go out there, but there's a whole business behind those fights.
Yeah.
Any advice you'd give to business owners, you know, entrepreneurs out there doing it. They're not fighting physically, but they're fighting to build a business. They're fighting, you know, lawsuits, problems, challenges. What kind of mindset can they apply?
No matter what whether you're trying to be a fighter or a business person, like if you build your entire life around that, you know, like my friends are my teammates, my coach, where I live is I live 5 minutes from the gym. Like I've built my entire life around this dream. And it's been my dream for however many years is to be a UFC champion, be a world champion, be the best fighter I can be. So if you build your life around whatever your dream is, I agree you have to work hard, but like that's such like a cliche thing. Like, of course everyone's working hard. You know what I mean? Like building your life around that, you know, that's what I think will set yourself up for success.
Boom. That's right, dude. Yeah. That is 100%. God damn it. I was just thinking of some shit. And when you were talking and said that, I agreed. Now I can't remember what I was going to say.
So you asked me if I would fight in the back room if they paid me enough money. Well, like I've been doing this. I won my first wrestling tournament when I was 4 years old. Four. So I've been competing in one-on-one sports for 28 years. Like, I'm going to make money. There's got to be a pot of gold at the end of it. I'm going to do whatever it takes to make some money.
Well, dude, just keep doing what you're doing. But I always wonder, like, you know, does it mean that someone else is just better than you? And why can't you be as good as the next guy?
Right.
Like, what if I just started practicing? Now my age and all this other shit takes into account. But, I mean, take just, you know, two 20-year-old dudes. If they both practiced hard, is there some sort of natural fucking talent that exists to where you'll never beat that guy because for some reason he's just a little bit faster? What is it like
the nature versus nurture argument is like the oldest argument ever, you know what I mean? Like, and of course you can have example, like John Jones is a good example where he's like obviously a freak of nature. He has I think an 84 inch reach. Like, I don't have an 84-inch reach. That no matter how much I train, my arms are never going to be 84 inches long, right? But, you know, I can get better if I keep going to the gym, and I have gotten better. Like, if you watch, like, my first UFC fight to where my striking is now, like, drastic improvements.
If I were you, I would focus on striking because I think it's the grapplers, dude, they're the boring ones.
Yeah.
I fucking hate when you guys are sitting there fucking wrestling.
Yeah.
Dude, everybody wants to see knockouts. Everybody wants to see ridiculous knockouts. So if you got to a point where, like, you know, you get in a ring and someone's going to see a knockout, dude, you're going to the top, even if you don't win the belt, because everybody wants to see that shit.
Yeah. So the flip side of that is that my fights are, I'm a grappler, but my fights are exciting. Like, I'm not
ground,
like,
and pound?
Ground and pound, my submissions, like, I have, like, exciting, like, my exchanges and the scrambles on the ground are exciting. I don't take you down and hold you.
Yeah, I hate that.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm very explosive, like, throws, you know, submissions, like, I show that grappling can be exciting.
Yeah, I mean, dude, when you're putting them in moves and shit, I agree. But I hate when they're down and they're not doing anything for a while. And I'm just sitting there like, fucking stand them up. And by the way, have you ever been stood up where it's like, fuck, don't stand me up. I had them right where I wanted them.
One time I was fighting as an amateur and they have weird rules where you couldn't ground and pound them to the head. And I had this guy's back or whatever. And they stood us up and I was like, dude, what do you want me to do here?
Do you know Dana or he doesn't start knowing you till you're way up there?
I've had conversations with him because of the Ultimate Fighter.
Now, you're practicing every single day. What does your schedule look like to prepare? I mean, like, not for a fight, for the belt. You want the belt, correct?
Of course.
And one day, I hope you get it, but what are you doing to prepare for that? What is your training schedule? Like, how much time do you put in a day?
It gets a little bit more intense when we do, like, camps. Where it's like basically phasing, but I'll do like a 10-week camp leading up to a fight. So during that 10-week camp, you know, we're morning and night pretty much every day, except Saturday morning we'll do one, and then Sundays are usually for recovery, sauna, cold tub, like stuff like that. But Monday through Friday it's morning and night, morning and night, and I'll do like a lot of like skill training in the morning and then more conditioning or intense training at night, sparring at night. Cause that's the idea. So if I'm going to fight, what time am I going to fight at?
In the probably evening.
Right. So what does it make sense to spar in the morning? You're never going to fight in the morning.
Not if trying to simulate reality.
Exactly. And that's the idea of your hard training. If you're going to do hard sparring, hard training, is you want to make it as close to that fight as possible, as simulated close to that fight.
And when you're walking in the ring or in the ring fighting, do you hear all those motherfuckers yelling like, grab him by the dick?
Sometimes, like the, at the Apex, when we fight at the Apex.
Well, you can hear everything there.
You hear everything.
I ain't talking about that. I'm talking about in UFC, like, because I've been, not ringside, never got that close, but I was pretty close. And like, there's people screaming. And then there's the coaches going fucking da, 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 da. Like I was, cause you guys don't look like you're paying attention to any of that.
Yeah.
I'm wondering like, do they hear you? Do they hear the screaming?
Sometimes like I can kind of tune out all the other voices and just listen to my coaches. Like I can hear just like one voice, but, yeah, I remember when I fought at MSG, and I took him down. I got one takedown. It was like the third round or something, and I was tired. And my coach was like, lift, lift, lift. I lifted him up, slammed him, and the whole crowd started cheering, USA, USA, because I was fighting a Brazilian. And that was like, I was like no longer tired anymore after that. Like after I heard everyone chant, I was like, oh, hell yeah.
Who are you fighting next? Do you know?
I don't have anything booked right now.
But you know there'll be another one?
Yeah.
Because is there a contract of a certain amount?
Yeah.
And if you lose again and again, eventually you're done? Is that how it works?
To an extent, it depends how many you lose. And like, as with any company, you know, it depends how valuable you are.
But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, maybe they're just matching you up with different people.
Yeah.
I don't get the matchup. I'm going to look more into how that works because like, to me, it's like, dude, if you're willing to fight and you're willing to fight, fucking let's see you fight.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys are willing to fight, but I think that's not a good fight.
But see, I wonder how they consider that. Like, oh, he's a grappler. He'll crush this guy.
Yeah.
And well, how do you know? Maybe I'll knock you out.
So typically I would think that they have their guy that they want to win, right? So maybe they'll match those guys up with guys that they think they can beat.
Do you think there's any of that?
Absolutely. For Sean O'Malley, that's like their... Now that Connor's gone, Sean O'Malley's like their guy. Like he's like...
Do you think it's because, again, because he does some pretty exciting shit.
Yeah, he has that superstar, like he has that it factor.
Who is your, like... In your mind, the best fighter in the middleweight division right now, whether they're the champ or not, or is the champ the best fighter in your mind?
I think Khamzat is the best, at least the most exciting I like to watch.
Yeah, I like that dude too.
He just came up. So he was at 170, and then he missed weight, and he came up to my weight, which is 185.
Now, if they said right now, dude, 10 weeks, you're fighting him, would you fight him?
Yeah, but I want more money.
You wouldn't be scared because that motherfucker.
Of course, I'd be scared. I'm scared to fight you.
You ain't afraid to fight normal people. You were talking about someone got lippy the other day in traffic. Yeah. Like you weren't afraid.
So that was Thanksgiving. I picked my buddy up. First time he's been home. He was in Florida for 3 years. He comes home. I pick him up for maybe 5 minutes, and I'm driving, and this guy is. We're stopped at a light. This guy gets out of his car and starts like approaching the car like real aggressively. And I probably should have stayed in the car.
But you had no heart pump. You weren't afraid.
No. I was more so like surprised. Like, what is this dude doing? So I get out of the car.
See, I wouldn't have got out of the car. I'd fucking say, what the fuck do you want, bro?
And I learned from my experience, next time I'll stay in the car. But I get out of the car and he pushes me in traffic. And I'm like, oh. And so I already knew what it was. Like, there was a line of cars at this light. So I already knew this was like a setup. Like, somebody's got a camera with TMZ just waiting. So he pushes me the first time, and I was still going to let him go after that. But I'm walking at him, and he pushes me a second time. So then my buddy gets out of the car, and he starts chirping at him. And he goes over and starts fighting with my buddy. And like, they start like, you know, wrestling around, throwing punches. So I just run over and just pick this dude up, spike him on his head on the sidewalk. And I went like knee on belly, and I was like, you know, stop, resist. And I don't know if it was his kid, his son, or his little brother, and his wife get out of the car. And the kid's like, let my dad go. I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, you know,
then you feel bad.
I felt bad. Yeah. But like, dude, this dude got, so I let him up, and then his wife gets out of the car, and she's like, you motherfucker, when you high beam someone, you apologize. And I was like, what? I just got attacked in traffic because of my high beams. Like, how insane must you be? We got back in the car. Didn't even miss the light. I'm like, dude, Thanksgiving. Come on now.
Dude, you said you were spiritually bankrupt. Mm-hmm. Are you now spiritually fulfilled?
I definitely got, I'm not perfect. I got some room to grow, but I got a good relationship with my God today.
When you finish a fight, do you like do what they do?
So my perspective on that is a little different, I would say. I think that my relationship with my God is like a personal thing.
When you keep saying my God, is he just yours?
Well,
do you think he's all of ours, or do you think he's just
perception?
Yours?
Is like our highest, you know, like what I value the most, like what I want to be in a man and a father. Like, that's how I look at God. Like, God is all those things I want to be, all the things I want to aspire to be. Like, those are the things I think about. So I say my God. And obviously, like our teammates, they just finished Ramadan. Like, I would say their God's probably, their idea of God or their perception of God is different, for sure.
That would be Islam faith, yeah. Islamic faith,
yeah.
Muslims.
Yeah.
So are you, would you say you're Christian or Muslim?
Neither. I'm not like a heavily religious guy.
Are you like Buddhist?
No.
What would you say you are?
I would say I'm spiritual.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a relationship with God. I talk to him. So back
but you
to
believe
the
you believe there is a God and there was a creator that created all this?
1000% God saved me. He did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Like, that's what I believe down to my bones. If I could have stopped getting high, like, I would have, because I tried so many times before. They talk about it. In the Bible too, it talks about, it's called the act of providence. And it's like, we have created such a habit of destruction that only this act of providence can save us. And for me, like, me overdosing, that was my act of providence.
Do you believe in any of these conspiracies?
Like what?
You know, do you listen to social media shit?
Give me an example.
Well, like, you know, the solar eclipse on April 8th is, you know, going to bring about the end of the earth. No. You can read it in Revelation.
No.
The CERN Hadron Collider is going to open up a portal where other entities can come
How
through.
How many times have we heard this, though? Like, they did, there was one, I feel like every couple years they have something, the end of the world is coming type thing.
Y2K was one.
Y2K, that was the one I was going to say.
You got to party like it's 1999. Yeah. So you don't believe in any of the shit?
No.
Do you believe that, like, you know, there's an elite group of people trying to depopulate the planet? Do you believe the vaccination was... Well, don't say vaccination. Why not? I can't edit it. Well, because, dude, that shit gets you suppressed. Really? Still. Remember back, like, I used to tell people, because if you go back to my thing, I knew something was fishy from day one when they were trying to beg you to get it.
So I don't care about being suppressed.
Well, then no one will hear this.
So
I want them to hear it.
All I will say is I am grateful that we were never required to get the vaccine.
Was that a Dana thing?
Yeah. Dana stood up, and shout out to Dana for sticking to his guns and saying,
that's why I like Dana, dude, because he's just a freaking real dude.
Yeah. Yeah, and he basically said, no, I am not going to force my fighters, you know, to do things that to get these vaccines and whatnot. And yeah, I'm glad he kept
the sport going, unlike a lot of other ones.
Right. Yeah. And they jumped through hoops. You know what I mean? Like let's say there's 28 fighters on a card, right? You have 14 fights, there's 28 fighters. Every time they would hold an event, not only did those fighters all have to get tested, make sure they didn't have COVID, but the three corners did too. So they would have, you know, someone would test positive and that fight would be off. So every fight card he had, every event he had, he was losing fights over and over. And he was just like, we're going to figure it out. Like, we're going to keep just solving problems, putting out fires and keeping this sport going. And for a while, he was the only sport that was still putting on events and putting on shows. NFL shut down, all them, they were like, nah, we're not dealing with this. We don't want too much of a headache.
What about, like, you know, P. Diddy right now is in the news for being a issue.
Right.
Epstein, his list, Clinton, the fact that everybody that surrounds him dies, like all this conspiracy shit. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, do you believe in any of it?
I'm not willing. Like, I wasn't there, but it doesn't surprise me. Do you?
Well, I wasn't there either.
Right.
But to me, it's like, dude, I lean towards the shit I want to believe. And then I'm like, well, that's stupid when I don't want to believe it. And so that's what you call confirmation bias. Yeah. So like, if I think you're a dickhead and I see something on the news, I'll be like, see, I knew he was a dickhead. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Where if I see something good about you, MSM's fake. It's fake news. So it's like people do that. So like right now everybody's getting, you know, crazy about P. Diddy. And I'm like, listen, I don't know if he did or didn't, you know, at the end of the day, is if the mainstream media is telling me, I don't necessarily know that it's true. So that's the way I look at conspiracy. I don't disbelieve it. Right. And I don't necessarily believe it, because where are you hearing it? If I'm hearing it from the individual is where I get it from. If I see the news says, hey, Andre just, did something. Well, I'd call you, say, did you do this? I wouldn't say, he did that. So people are too quick to believe.
I couldn't agree more. And like, it's unfortunate now that you can't really believe anything you hear on the news. And it's like, and back to the vaccine, like, I mean, obviously they lied to us about a lot of things, you know what I mean? And once you lie to me, like, I don't care if it's you're my teammate or the news, or once you lie to me, like, I just don't believe anything else you say after.
See, that's what I'm talking about right there.
If you're not man enough to just say the truth, like, what are you afraid of? Like,
or I was wrong.
Right.
I believed, I was scared. Whatever the reason is, like, tell the damn truth. But they lied and they continue to lie. Like, go look at the ingredients in our food, bro. The food your child is going to eat. Look at the ingredients, and then go to another country and look at the ingredients. Same product. Let's call it Frosted Flakes. Different. Because that country says that shit's not allowed in our food. In Russia, your boy Putin, I say your boy because you're Russian.
Not my boy.
Dude, I used to say, dude, I don't mind. I think Putin appeared. Oh, he's a killer. And like, based on what? Some fucking shit you read? Like, dude, Putin does what I consider the right shit. Like, he made it a treason if you modify food, basically put poison in the food. You come over here and, dude, I believe they're doing it on purpose, but that could be my confirmation bias. Then you think, well, why would they? Well, then you listen to the you know, elite talk about that we're overpopulated. Now, again, imagine just we're all multi-billionaires. And keep in mind, there's trillionaires above billionaires that you never even heard of. And if all of us got together, like there's 8 billion of us. And if we don't think about something, dude, like in the future, we're not going to have any food because there's going to be 800 billion and we can't sustain. So we need to figure out how to control the population and reduce it down to where everybody's happy. Who do you want in that world? Who do you pick? Some people got to die, dude. And you're not thinking of these people over here by the billions as people. They're the sheep. They're the cattle. They're the dumbasses. They're the dumbasses. Well, again, I believe that in a way. Why? Well, because of the coincidences that you see. How many coincidences do there need to be before it's not a coincidence? Like, it's just crazy. But then I know that I can't do anything about it. So I say, whatever. And if you read the Bible, you know, everybody quotes the Bible. Well, dude, they've proven that that's had errors and omissions. So now can you believe that? And then there's blind people, not blind physically, but like they don't want to see, that will argue that. Oh, no. And it's like, that's just what they were told. So what do you do? I don't know, man. I keep asking, you know, especially people that are based on mindset, because to me, it's all mindset. How do you forget that shit and just move on? Don't let it bother you. I always make jokes. Someone said the other day, aren't you scared of end of the world and this and that? And I said, nah, dog, I read the book. It turns out fine from what it tells us. It's going to be just fine if you're on the good side of things.
Right.
But anyway, last question. Your branding on shirts and shit. Yeah. So like, are you allowed, like if you wanted to wear a vote Trump or fuck Trump shirt walking into the ring, are you allowed to? I mean, not UFC, because Dana and him are buddies, but would you be allowed to wear anything you want in there, or you're not allowed to do that?
No, they have an exclusive deal with Venom, so you have to wear all Venom gear.
And Venom paid them, not you.
Of course. Well, we do get paid. We get, it's based on how many fights in the UFC you get, but we get a percentage.
Because I see you guys holding up the empty can of Monster or whatever. Yeah. And then I forget what fighter it is, but he sat down at the press and he always gets rid of the fucking sodas that are on there.
Yeah. Adesanya.
Yeah. Like, dude, that's how I'd be. Like, fuck your sodas. Now, does Dana get pissed if you do that?
I like Monster and I like Hans Mollenkamp.
Do you like soda?
No, I don't like soda, but I like energy drinks. And I like Monster. And I think he does cool. I think they
see
do
now
cool
Monster
shit.
Right now should be like, that's the motherfucker we want promoting.
Let's
us.
Go. Let's go, Hans.
So, but are you able to find those? If there's listeners right now, you'd be surprised who listens to this show. I get surprised every time someone goes, oh dude, I freaking love your show. I'm like, fuck, you listen to it. And I know Dana one time I said something, but they sent it to Dana because I know someone that's best friends grew up with Dana and he sent it to someone that knows me and they sent it to me and they said, Dana just sent this around to everybody.
What was it about?
It was about, I'll have to look it up. God damn it. What was it about? It was about,
when it comes to Dana, like I know people have a lot of negative things to say about him, but like, none of us would be here if it wasn't for Dana. Like,
oh, shit,
Dana White took MMA, mixed martial arts, from being like literally a sport where like 10 people would show up and just fight, no weight classes, no TV. Like, it was nothing. It was basic to where it is today, where it's they just sold for how many billion dollars? Like, he did that. Like,
well, dude, Dana's a stub, but let me tell you something, and I'm not taking credit for it because I won't, but like, dude, when I first moved to this town, I had a couple of buddies that had money, and I thought, man, that's all you need is money. And I said, let's put together a fucking fight, and let's rent Thomas and Mac, and let's just put up a bounty and see who's really the toughest motherfucker around. No rules, no nothing, just get in the thing and fight. That's basically UFC, if you ask me.
Right, but that appeals to a small...
Yeah, but that was way before the UFC did it.
Right.
Not way before, but a little bit before. And I talked these guys into funding it. You know, they'll put up the money, they'll do everything. And we started trying to put it together and we got shut down by the Nevada Gaming Commission. They said, no, you can't do that. And I thought, ah, fuck this, stupid. And then they gave up because they were doing business. And I thought, man, this is bullshit. And then like a year or two later, dude, the UFC comes out and I'm like, what the fuck? That's my thing. I wanted to do that. But then Dana comes along, obviously, who's a badass. But from what I heard, like, you tell me, I don't know. I'm just saying what I heard, which may not be true. The only reason it worked is the show. And the only reason the show happened is because Fertitta's had $40 million. So I'm thinking, see, I could have done that. No, I didn't have $40 million and I didn't have Dana and I didn't have all the things that put that together. But if someone said, Brad, would you give Dana the credit? Well, yeah, for sure. But I would also give Fertitta's the credit. Why? Because if Dana didn't have the Fertitta's, he couldn't have done what he did.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's a combination.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
But UFC is definitely built by Dana. Here's the text that they sent me. They just said, Dana sent this around to, and this
I
is.
I just gave you both $1 million cash. How would you feel?
I'll be extremely grateful.
Would anybody be able to get you in a bad mood for a little while?
Absolutely not.
Okay, Deanna, would you agree?
I would agree 100%.
If I said I'll give you the $1 million, matter of fact, I made it $10 million. But you couldn't wake up tomorrow. You're done. Would you take it?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so what you're both saying is that waking up, just waking up tomorrow, is worth more than $10 million?
That's hell of a perspective. Yep, it is. It is worth it.
Then why ain't you feeling that way every damn time you wake up?
Oh, shit.
It was about gratitude.
I never looked at it that way.
Nobody does, dude. That's why we get up and we're all.
Yeah, I will say, like, one thing.
So this dude said, hey, hope you're well. This video was just sent to me in a group text by Dana. Really great way to look at life. That, and I haven't even thought about that. I try to be grateful every day I wake up, but this puts it on another level. Blah, blah, blah. But he said, dude, Dana sent me this. I'm like, shit. So Dana knows who old Brad Lee is. I'm going to try to get his ass on this podcast, too, because I just like his fucking attitude. Yeah. He's a real dude. You're a real dude. Appreciate you coming on, by the way.
Thank you, brother.
And folks, listen, pay attention. You guys, let's go help. What's the kid's name with leukemia?
Adam.
Let's go help Adam. I mean, even $5 by a few of us adds up to a lot. Or 50 if you can afford it. I'm gonna go sponsor, or not sponsor, but I'm gonna go donate. And then guys, if you guys want Andre to come either on your podcast, there's a lot of guys that listen to my podcast and you're gonna get hit up to be on their podcast. If you want him on your stages, okay, hit him up, Andre Petrosky on Instagram, just DM him. And if you want him to come do a camp for the kids or adults, you know, wrestling, fighting, or just mindset, man, him and his team will come out there. They'd love to come out there and host one. And again, dude, hopefully you're the champ one day. And last question, if you are the champ one day, if you are ever the champion fighting for the belt, because you're not a champ till you defend it. I disagree with that, by the way. That's what they say. You're a champ when you fucking knock out the champ. Now, again, they say not until you defend it, but you got to become a champ by beating the champ. The next fight, because I wouldn't know in the first fight. The next fight, how do you decide who gets to walk out with you?
Hopefully still the same people that I brought with up.
I know, but why not add another one? Like, are you limited? Can you say, Brad, you can fucking roll out with me and be in the corner?
You want to walk out with me?
Fuck yeah, let's dude. Go. If you're the fucking, I'll do it even if you're not the champ. But I always wonder, like, when they're coming out, you see their fucking team behind them and they fucking,
yeah.
You know, how do you, like, who are those people?
Coaches.
I've seen Bieber in what's his name's corner?
Connors.
Somebody's. Yeah, might even have been Floyd Mayweather. Might have been boxing. But, like, the corner that comes out behind you. You know, and I've seen celebrities doing that shit. I always thought, like, fucking, who decides who gets to come out? The fighter? Like, are you allowed to say, like, they don't ask you who's walking out behind you?
Yeah, no, they ask, for sure.
If you said Brad Lee, would they say, go ahead, I don't give a fuck? Or would they say, who's that and why?
So typically, and like I said before, like, you know, the more you produce, the more leeway you get. So, and especially if you're the main event, you can add some people to your group that walks you out. But yeah, it's always up to their discretion.
Okay.
They
so
do
if
whatever
you're,
they want.
If you're ever a champ defending your belt, you got to agree. Old Brad Lee's walking out somehow, some way with you.
Hell yeah.
And you'll be back on dropping bombs.
Let's go.
Indeed. Folks, go help people like this guy does. And until next time, keep it real.